Ready to go. Couple more minutes.
Actually.
Couple more minutes. What time do you have, Spot?
I have 1:30, and we're recording.
Okay.
We're recording.
Recording? All right. All right, we're going to go ahead and call the December the 11th, 2020 Occupational Therapy Examiners meeting to order at 1:30. And we'll go to roll call.
Quentin McAllister?
Present.
Barbara Paulson?
Present.
Charlene Marbs?
Present.
All right, moving on to item three, declarations of conflict of interest. Does anybody have any conflicts?
Barbara Paulson does not.
Charlene Marbs does not.
And again, I will be recusing myself from item 7B, Philip Rose, as a conflict of interest. And we'll move on to review of the future board dates, January the 8th, February the 12th, and March the 12th. As far as I know, it should be fine for me if I am still needed.
There's nothing on my calendar for those dates, so Barbara Paulson is good.
All right.
This is Charlene Marks. As of now, I'm good for those dates as well.
All right. And that takes us to item five, approval of the regular session minutes for November the 13th's meeting. And if there are no corrections, I'll go ahead and make a motion to approve those minutes for November the 13th.
Mr. Chair, those minutes are not included in your board meeting materials.
Okay.
I left them in there hoping that we would be able to get them in there before the meeting, but the meeting on November 13th had a lot of detail that we need to make sure we capture for the record. So we're going to take a little extra time, or I'm taking some extra time to get that done. And then I neglected to put the executive session meeting minutes from September 11th on there.
All right, no worries.
Oh, well, I'm happy to hear that because I thought I totally blew by those.
Because I rely on Barbara for the. Sorry.
No problem.
I had a very busy week this week, so looking at meeting minutes, I figured somebody else could catch anything that needed to be cut. My apologies.
That's why we're a team.
Exactly.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and table item 5A, and we'll move on to item 6, and that's 6A, initial review of complaints, and that first one is James Boy. Is he present on the call by chance?
It looks like he just joined us.
Yes,
he is. I am.
Okay. All right. And it looks like we have documentation of a number of misbillings or fraudulent billings or billing errors. And so I'm going to open the floor to discuss this complaint. And I did review, and I saw where there was some underbilling, some overbilling, some overlaps with PT, which would, you know, clearly indicate that there was, you know, something amiss in the billing. Maybe if you guys are okay with it, I'd like to open the floor for James to kind of speak a little bit about the situation and give us some background. Do you go by James or Jim, sir?
I go by either. It's okay.
Okay. All right. What is your preference?
Jim will be fine.
Jim. Okay. Jim, if you want to go ahead and speak to that situation and events, I'd greatly appreciate that.
Yeah. It's been a while back, but generally while I was there, I would, in the morning, do all my chart reviews, and then I would do my evals, and I tried to remember to, when I went into a room, to check the time, but sometimes I would forget. And so if I was halfway through, or someone says, oh, wouldn't I come in, and I would I'd look at the clock again. And then towards the end of the day, I would then do my vows, writing the times. I had written them down most of the time. So my problem was is I didn't always accurately document while I was doing it. Some guesswork, I'm sorry to say, on when I was actually in the room a little bit. It was, as reading through some of what they were saying, it is true, and a lot of people were having the same problems. In our scheduling, there was no time given to go from patient to patient. So we had to go underneath the time that we were scheduled to see the people in order to get to the next person. And sometimes I was able to go from one to the next. I can't remember each and every patient I saw. I know that I saw them for the time I said, more or less. I'm sorry to say I wasn't totally accurate to the minute. But I think, especially on the one where I overlapped the two people, I gave them both the same time and was on the same time, the PT, or one of them was on the PT. Coming back at the lunchtime or another time when I was doing the write-up, I would put, oh, I saw this patient from this time to the, and especially with the vowels, I spent more time doing them than I did document, because they didn't allow us an hour, and with everything we had to do, it took an hour and 15 minutes, hour and a half with my documentation time, with chart review and everything. So I would say I've given the time, and I down. I said, "Oh, I saw that person at 9 o'clock. I saw that person at 10 o'clock." And I sure what happened is I accidentally documented two people at the same time. So my problem was I was not diligent keeping accurate time logs of when I saw people. So that things like that did come up. And that's my reason.
Yeah, I mean, and they give a list, of common themes in the complaint. And so just to address some of those with the other board members. So one of them is underproductive time or non-productive time. You know, that's not something that's not, you know, a disciplinary look. Long lunches, from a board standpoint, I don't think that productive time is going to be something we're going to look at. Shorting patients' minutes versus what's scheduled, that doesn't really, in my opinion, rise to the level of disciplinary action, because that indicates that he's, you know, billing for what he actually at least thought he was seeing the patient time for, right? You know, following an established schedule, just to kind of speak to that, it's very hard to maintain a consistent schedule in an inpatient facility with everything that goes on in those facilities. So the overlapping the treatments is what I find to be the biggest concern. I would like to hear from both Ms. Paulson and Ms. Marbs on that.
This is Ms. Marbs, or Charlene. I guess I'd like to understand the overlapping the patients a little bit more.
Correct me.
Jim,
go ahead, my opinion. Jim, you have the floor.
Okay. I didn't hear the question.
I apologize. Would you explain a little bit more about overlapping of patients? Like how that occurred? I'm not clear on that. From your perspective.
Yes. The big one that they mentioned, while I cannot remember the exact case and the patients. My guess is that I accidentally gave the same time to people. Like I said, I do it my about my chart reviews for the patients, and then I would go in and see my patients, and keeping track of the general events, I was in the room with them. And then I, later on in the day, would go and do my write-up. And I think I signed, says I was, I, that patient, I think it was 9 to 8 to 9. And then I did a few more, and then I did the second eval, wrote it up, and mistakenly put it down as 8 to 9 as well. And, you know, it says I got the time, the hour wrong in the documentation.
Okay.
I, of course, did not see the patient, two patients at the same time, and I did not co-treat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Boyd, I know you admitted to less than accurate timekeeping strategies on your part. And I'm just wondering if some of the old, the incorrect time of services was an issue for anyone who was doing some service to patients in that study.
I cut out a little bit. Are you asking if I actually did accidentally under-treat the patient?
No. What you said that you had less than accurate timekeeping strategies is the way I interpret it, right?
Yes.
So I'm just wondering if was this a just a personal issue for you in your time you allowed to and the attention you neglected to put to start and end times, or was this an issue for multiple service providers, you know, on the time, considering that you also mentioned there was no real travel time between patients built in? So I'm just curious.
Well, I can only speak for myself, and it was something that I struggled with, because I would go right on into the room and the patient was the first thing I would engage with. And then I would have to remind myself, oh, time. I do know that, I don't know how other people approach it. We didn't really talk about it. I do know from looking at other people's cards, they also kind of underbilled for what schedule was, because there was no scheduled transfer time. And so I was kind of, from that part, I was following what everyone was doing.
Okay.
What was the productivity standard at this position?
You know, I don't think they ever told us. And the last I heard is that the department was meeting their productivity.
This is Charlene. So you're saying when you started the role, they never discussed what your productivity range or level should be? Like those goals were never discussed?
Well, I'm sure it was, quite frankly. And I think it was in the 70s, 75, 72, 75. And everything had always been said that we're meeting our productivity. However, the director was starting to get a little more anxious that the building was not meeting its financial obligations, and was very anxious that we treat harder and more, and you know, quote unquote, more effectively.
Were you ever spoken to directly about your productivity levels as an individual practitioner?
No.
Okay.
In fact, 2 days before this, the boss had mentioned that she was glad that I was signing up to be an instructor because she thought I had a lot to offer.
Okay, thank you.
And they, so from the information we have, it looks like there were five specific occasions where there were overlapping times or inconsistently billed times. And that's what I think, as a board, that's what I think we should focus on considering. I know it says out of 32 times, Jim didn't follow his schedule. That, in my opinion, that's kind of irrelevant to the whole circumstance of what we're looking at. You know, these five occasions where there was, you know, misbilled or overbilled or overlapping, those are the occasions where we can, in my opinion, look and say, okay, you know, whether this was a lack of attention to detail from a time standpoint or whether it was done purposefully, I think that's where we can kind of focus on looking for discipline, if that's the route we're looking at. So, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to clarify. I wrote down that there were four instances of overlap for a total of 95 minutes. Is that what?
Yeah, I was looking at the five instances altogether. I think one of them was, it wasn't overlap, it was underbilling, I think.
Okay, just wanted to clarify.
Yeah. Because, I mean, whether it was errantly or on purpose, that would technically be billing fraud, which is an ethical violation under our statutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I sympathize with you in a lot of ways, because I've been in those situations where, you know, you have to go, review charts. You have, you know, six evals that day, and, you know, maybe you didn't write down the time exactly right. But I was always pretty good about writing my times down, too. So.
Is it possible that it was more just a case of non-professional, just kind of guessing, well, yeah, I thought it was 9 o'clock, as opposed to an intentional?
Yes.
I'm just throwing that out there.
He said yes. And I mean, you know, looking at the amount of, you know, the times and stuff, I mean, they're complaining about underbilling. That he has no, there's no benefit for him underbilling. So, and that kind of leads me to think that, you know, that this really isn't an intentional thing, that it's unfortunate. An unfortunate thing, more than anything. So, I mean, 7 minutes overlap. So, you know, you try to retrace your day and it's not perfect, and you say that you overlapped for 7 minutes on one. The 20 minute one where the PT was in there, that one would be maybe a little bit more concerning for me. But these 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 8 minutes, you know.
Right.
Mr. Chair, as I think about it and looking at everything, I guess for me it sounds like partly an issue of time management.
Yes.
That's where I kind of land in this discussion, and that's what it sounds like. And I don't know if there's courses or training on how to better do that to correct.
And Jim, I read it correctly. You were terminated from your position based on this?
Yes. Yeah.
What setting are you working in now, may I ask?
Home health and acute care in the hospital.
Okay. I think where I'm at, guys, is... Oh, Barbara, I'm sorry, go ahead. I saw you.
No, I was just kind of leaning in.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm thinking, you know, maybe a consent agreement for some continuing education, or even a non-disciplinary, which will be like a letter of concern. Is that correct? Yeah. So I truly believe that this was not intentional. And then, you know, looking at these, you know, 7 minutes here, 5 minutes there. What do you guys, what do you guys think?
Go ahead, Charlene, I'll follow you.
I lean towards a non-disciplinary, what'd you say, letter?
A letter of concern.
Letter of concern. And some continuing ed. Again, if there's some training that can be had on, you know, time management, you know, adding that to consideration as well. But I definitely lean towards the letter of concern, non-disciplinary letter of concern.
And I, too, am on board with a disciplinary letter of concern. Time management is a important skill, and I see it as a critical skill in the environments you're working in, Mr. Boyd, to, you know, give every patient the amount of time that they've been prescribed. And I guess my hope is that this was an eye-opening and a learning experience for you to be more intentional and focus on your timekeeping.
Yes. So.
And Ms. Khan, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe we can do a non-disciplinary with continuing ed. Is that correct?
I believe that you can. Can offer a consent agreement for a non-disciplinary order with certain CEs if you don't believe that it rises to the level of discipline. You're free to do that. We can do it through a consent agreement at this phase since it is just an initial review.
Okay. I think 3 hours of continuing education in ethics and or billing would be a sufficient thing to attach to the letter of concern in a non-disciplinary order.
I agree
as well.
All right, I'll go ahead and make a motion to offer a consent agreement for a letter of concern based on errant billing and add 3 hours of continuing education to be completed within 6 months of the signed consent agreement. Do I have a second?
This is Charlene Marks. I second.
All in favor?
Quentin McAllister. Quentin McAllister.
Yeah, aye.
Barbara Paulson.
Aye.
Charlene Marks.
Aye.
And that motion carries 3-0. So we're moving on. And
Does Mr. Boyd have any questions about what that means?
I don't believe so. It just I've got 6 months to accrue 3 continuing education units on ethics and billing. Is that correct?
Correct. And that's in addition to anything that's required for your licensure.
Okay. I just got my license, so it won't apply to the next 20 credits, correct?
Correct. So you get those 3 and then 20 additional after that.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm just getting back to my place on the agenda. So we're at item 6. A2, Victor Rivera. And I think maybe the first thing that we should do is go into executive session to discuss this. So I'll make a motion to go into executive session for legal advice in regards to Victor Rivera.
This is Barbara Paulson. I'll second that motion.
All in favor?
Quentin McAllister?
Aye.
Barbara Paulson?
Aye.
Charlene Marbs?
Aye.
That motion carries 3-0. Time to executive session is 1:55.
Back in regular session at 2:05. Mr. Vararta is still on the line with us. We're not talking about his matter right now, though, and Mr. Boyd has left the meeting.
Okay. All right, so we are currently discussing item 6A2, Victor Riviera. This is a matter of a therapist that has, correct me if I'm wrong, but he has been convicted of child molestation and is currently in jail?
Yes, he's currently in prison. He was convicted and sentenced to 15 years in prison and lifetime probation.
All right, and this goes against pretty much every ethical and moral code that the AOTA and BCOT has, and it also breaks a number of our state statutes.
And Mr. Chair, Ms. Whiteford can provide an overview of the case if you would like to.
Would the other board members like to hear that?
Yes, I think that would be good to hear.
Be good to have that on the record.
Okay. I'll go back to my investigative report. So the board received a complaint on July 29th, 2019 that Mr. Rivera had been arrested after work on July 25th, 2019 for molesting his niece from the ages of 3 to 13. A police report was obtained from the Page Police Department that included information that was obtained from not only the alleged victim, but from Mr. Rivera himself. Then Mr. Rivera was taken into custody on, I think that's a typo in my report. He was taken into custody at the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office and then transferred elsewhere on August 1st. And after that August 1st date, we had a difficult time locating Mr. Rivera. We finally were able to locate him mid-October this year. We were informed that he was being held at the Coconino County Detention Center from August 1st, 2019 to April 24th, 2020. And then upon his conviction and sentencing, he was transferred to the Arizona State Prison Kingman Huachuca Unit on April 24th, 2020. Let's see. I was able to obtain documents of the grand jury non-supervening indictment and charging document, the plea agreement, several minute entries, and his commitment/release order. He was ultimately found guilty of molestation of a child, a Class 2 felony, and a dangerous crime against children in the first degree, and for attempted sexual contact with a minor, a Class 3 felony offense, and a dangerous crime against children in the second degree. He was sentenced to 15 years with the Department of Corrections and is on lifetime probation.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you. All right. And in light of that, we have, I'm sorry, I'm a little disgusted. Sorry. We have a consent agreement that's been drafted for an order for Victor to sign that would be surrendering his license, which is the equivalent of revocation. I would I would make a motion to approve that. And if he doesn't sign that within the allotted time, we'll go ahead and move this to a formal hearing for the matter.
Was that a motion, Mr. Chair?
I'm sorry, is there a second?
I will be happy to second that motion.
Is there any other discussion before I make a vote?
No.
No.
All in favor?
Quentin McAllister?
Aye.
Barbara Paulson?
Aye.
And Charlene Marks?
Aye.
Motion carries 3-0. And the, just to be on the record, there was no further action taken because he is unable to practice as he is currently in jail. So, I'm just getting my place on the agenda, so bear with me. All right, we're on item 7A, Paul Vallarta. And that's a review of our initial application. And we've got some documents. Looks like there is a significant history of DUIs, starting with 99 going through 2010. Another dose, has not suspended license in 04, a battery in 93. A violation of a consent agreement in 2015 from Nevada, and that's the one I'm not real clear on, from the OT board in Nevada. There's a consent agreement there. And I was trying to put that together. Paul, can you help us out on that consent agreement from Nevada, from the OT board in Nevada?
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. As far as the Nevada one, they granted me a license believe it was this year. And with the condition that when I do move to Nevada, if I find a job in Nevada, that I would let them know that I moved to Nevada and that I would have to fill out a form or have a supervising OT fill out a form for me every week. Just make sure that that I have supervision.
Mr. Bayard, may I ask a question?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Bayard, I would like the Mr. Chair. I was a little confused by some of this. So, in 2015, you had a license in Nevada, correct?
Right.
And then you were on probation, terms to be completed within 4 years, or they would automatically revoke your license. And then in February of 2019, which was like a couple months before your expiration date of that fourth year, you asked for a extension, or wait, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. The board denied you that, is that correct?
Yes. One of the conditions was that I needed to have a job. And I wasn't able to get a job in Nevada, or I couldn't find a job in Nevada, and so they took the license back, but they gave it back to me after I had to reapply. I had to wait to reapply, so that's when they gave it back to me because I wasn't able to find a job in Nevada, so that's why they took it from me.
Okay. Yes, and I saw that. Your application for licensure was approved on May 26th of 2020.
Yes.
Okay. So I was just confused on didn't look like you didn't have a license, and then in May you have a license. So I just needed to hear the facts on what was going on there. So thank you for clarifying that.
No problem.
Mr. Vallarta, I have a question for you. This is Ms. Marv. So you got your license back, but you still haven't found employment in Nevada, and you're relocating to Arizona. Is that?
Well, right. It's right now with the pandemic and COVID-19, it's really difficult to find a job. But it's not that I have been trying. It's just there's not a whole lot of jobs out there right now. And so I decided to apply in Arizona. So
Mr. Vallarta, Mr. Vallarta, are you currently in Arizona, or are you residing in Nevada?
No, I currently moved to California.
Okay.
So you live in California, but they denied your license, correct?
Well, I haven't applied to California this year.
I believe we have a letter saying that you were denied on February the 21st, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, that was the application for 2018, but they didn't get back to me till the 19th, or till January 19th of 2019. So technically that application's from 2018.
But the denial is from 2020.
Okay, so then, but like I said, I haven't applied for California. So the last time that you see there of 2020, January 2020 was when they gave me a response. So it was, I guess, from the 19th. November, from November 19th. And they got back to me January.
And just one more clarification. Was there also a denial in California in March of 2012?
Possibly, because what happened, I ended up eventually getting a license in Utah, and I had been working in Utah since 2014.
And there was also a denial by Arizona in 13 or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but before I went to Utah, I had to try to get a license in Arizona, but they didn't give it to me. I guess because one of my cases had been just too close. It had been 3 years since my DUI, and I guess they weren't going to give it to me.
I mean, well, not only that, it looks like there's a pretty clear history of substance abuse. I mean...
Yeah, I had some DUIs, but it's been over 10 years since those DUIs, and I went to court in September, and I got those cases expunged, as it states in that minute order that I sent to Ms. Whiteford. So pretty much all my cases I've got expunged, and they're really old cases, like you said, back in 93. Mm-hmm. And the last DUI was in 2010.
Ms. Whiteford, do we have a current background, FBI background for Mr. Vallarta?
Mr. Vallarta did turn in his fingerprints, and I requested that they be processed immediately right after the last meeting, but... As I mentioned earlier, we're having issues with the Central Service Bureau not processing things in a timely manner, so those have not been sent in yet. Unless Ms. Igarola has an update on that.
No, Ms. Whiteford, it's still the same. They've been processed, and I'm waiting on CSB for that, and I have heard that... Arizona DPS is backed up as well, but we are waiting on the CSB to get them processed.
Mr. Chair, just so you know, CSB, the Central Service Bureau, we are required to send them the list of fingerprints that we're going to have processed with a request to have funds transferred to the Department of Public Safety before the Department of Public Safety will accept those fingerprints for processing.
Okay. Yes, thank you. I'm sorry.
No worries, no worries.
Mr. Vallarta, do you have a job pending here in Arizona?
Yes, ma'am. I went over there to Arizona back in October, and they offered me a position at KRMC, Kingman Regional Medical Center. And we had this hearing before last month, but I had to call them back and told them that I hadn't got my license yet, so I would have to wait. If they wanted to wait for me, that would be fine. And they agreed to wait for me. So there is a job pending for me to go to Arizona.
Mr. Vallarta, when you talked about some of your charges being expunged, and we got the paperwork through the Municipal Court of Antelope Valley. Is that what that was?
That was a court that I went to get a copy of the order, yes.
Okay.
Let's see.
I think at this time it may be beneficial to go into executive session for legal advice. Do I have a second for that?
I second, Mr. Chair. This is Charlene Marr.
All in favor?
Clinton McAllister?
Aye.
Barbara Paulson?
Aye.
Charlene Marr?
Aye.
And the motion carries 3-0, and time of executive session is 2:22.
Okay, Mr. Barrett is back in the room.
All right, and we're back into regular session at 2:40, discussing Paul Vallarta, and so I'll open the floor for discussion, continuing the conversation. So there's a lot of information going on here, but we don't have any other additional information beyond 2015 other than the consent agreement with the Nevada board, where the license was initially, denied, but not for any particular reason other than didn't work in the state to meet the requirements to receive that license. The fact that I was told that I didn't apply in California in 2020, but it was a denial in 2020, I have a problem with that statement myself personally. What I would like to see is the background check to really be able to thoroughly make a good decision on this license. I know, we have grounds for denial based on unethical behavior, breaking and then AR statute where there's been a misdemeanor or felonies. Also with MBCOT, there's that principle 4 attached to that, and then there's the ethics of the principles for AOTA and MBCOT. So I just wanted to highlight those components and then open the floor for each of the other two board members to discuss their thoughts, and then we can deliberate and discuss the motion or possible motions.
Mr. Chair, this is Charlene Marr. I do have a question that I would like to direct to Mr. Vallarta. Mr. Vallarta, I have a concern that there were places on your application that were answered contrary to what was actually true. So at this time, I would like to ask you, do you have any other, or have you had any other issues involving the law since 2010?
No, ma'am, and that's what I wanted to explain to you guys, that I have been working in Utah for the last over 6 years, and I had no problems at work with it, and no incident with the law or anything in that matter. And I've been just pretty much doing what I'm supposed to, just going to work, doing my continuing education classes to keep my license. But I have no incident with the law at all. And I was hoping you guys would have had my background check done to confirm that.
Mm-hmm. That part is a bit out of our control, but
right.
I'm a bit confused. So you say you've been working in Utah for the past 6 years?
Yes, ma'am. I got my license in Utah back in January 2014, and I was working there up until April of 2020 without any incident. And the reason I was laid off was because of the pandemic, that we had a reduction in force because of the COVID-19. But I haven't got any, I hadn't had any encounters with the law at all. That's why I was hoping you guys would consider giving me a license in Arizona. And I mean, if I would even even like in Las Vegas, like if I had to be like on probation, that would be fine with me. I mean, just to prove myself to you guys, because I haven't had any incident with my license in Utah at all.
Mr. Chair, that's the only question I have at this time. Thank you, Mr. Vallarta.
You're welcome.
This is Barbara Paulson. Mr. Vallarta, my concern is that with your initial application, you weren't forthcoming in your disclosures about, you know, your past events with the law, and we had to, you know, ask for them and things like that. So I too feel strongly that I would like to postpone this till we get the results from the background check. At this time, it's we're not denying anything, your license, Mr. Vallarta, but these are important decisions, and we really like to have all the information that we can obtain.
Yes, ma'am, and that's why I was working with Ms. Woodford, mm-hmm. trying to get her everything that she requested in a timely fashion, because I know this is very serious, especially it's like my livelihood right now. And I really appreciate you guys, all of you, Mr. Chair, for, you know, hearing my case.
Well, and, you know, if all has been well these last 10 years, and once we get the results back, you know, we can hopefully move forward then.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Paulson.
Ms. Paulson, did I hear a motion out of that?
Okay. Maybe you did, Mr. Chair. I will make a motion to table this license request until we receive the results of the, is the correct verbiage criminal background?
Yes, it is.
Background check?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'll go ahead and second that motion. All in favor?
Clinton McAllister?
Aye.
Barbara Paulson?
Aye.
Charlene Marbs?
Aye.
And that motion passes 3-0. Moving on to, excuse me, item 7B.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Yes.
Mr. Vallarta, we will notify you of the next meeting, but I'll also let you know when we do receive that criminal background check.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you for attending, Mr. Vallarta, and telling us your story.
Thank
Appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, we're on 7BI, and that is tabled due to a conflict with myself, so we're moving to site 7B2, Tina Marie Vaca. And it looks like we're waiting for some information that she's trying to obtain.
Oh, let's see. If we are, then it's a mistake on my part. Let's see.
Mr. Chair, I had when was this? November. That on March 2020, the town prosecutor in Gilbert declined to prosecute this, and the statute of limitation has lapsed.
Okay.
Did anyone else see that?
That is actually the very last page of your, or next to the last page of your board meeting materials, page 276.
Okay.
So.
Oh. Sorry, I was focusing on three things due to very, very limited time, so. So, it looks like. In light of that, this is a review. We should be granting the license. So I'll go ahead and make a motion to approve the renewal license for Tina Vaca. Do I have a second?
This is Charlene Marr. I second.
All in favor?
Quentin Callister?
Aye.
Barbara Paulson?
Aye.
Charlene Marbs?
Aye.
And that motion passes 3-0. And we are moving on to, obviously, 7DI is tabled. That's my renewal for, oh my gosh, my words. Hold on. And this is recorded. I forgot what we do. We ratify. My license won't be ratified this round. All right. So that brings us to 8A. So I'll make a motion to ratify the 66 license approved by the executive director. Do you have a second?
This is Charlene Marks. I second.
All in favor?
Quentin McAllister?
Aye.
Barbara Paulson?
Aye.
Charlene Marks?
Aye.
And that motion passes 3-0. Moving on to B, and we have one limited permit. So I'll make a motion to approve that one limited permit, or ratify that one limited permit was approved by the executive director. Do I have a second?
This is Barbara Paulson. I'll second that motion.
All right. All in favor?
Quentin McAllister?
Aye.
Barbara Paulson?
Aye.
Charlene Marbs?
Aye.
And that, Matt, that passes 3-0. Man, I'm having some word-finding issues today. All right. And last on that item is ratifying 324 renewal license. So again, make a motion to approve those, to ratify those 324 license renewals. Do I have a second?
This is Charlene Marr. I second.
All in favor?
Quentin McAllister?
Aye.
Barbara Paulson?
Aye.
Charlene Marbs?
Aye.
And that motion carries 3-0, bringing us down to item 9A, the Occupational Therapy License Act, and I will turn the table to Ms. Whiteford for items 9.
Okay, item 9A, the Occupational Therapy... Did somebody say something? The Occupational Therapy Licensure Compact, I neglected to put an attachment for that, but just so you know, the Arizona... Occupational Therapy Association plans to pursue legislation for the licensure compact here in Arizona. I did exchange emails with someone from the association. It turns out that the any budgetary concerns wouldn't occur until, I think, 2022, fiscal year 2022. And I spoke with someone from the physical therapy board because they have a licensure compact. My concern was that it was going to take these massive changes to our system to keep track of the privileges that people would obtain. Physical therapy doesn't track privileges because it's not an actual license. So, you know, we would have to, you know, I'm sure our compact would be a little bit different, so I'd have to confirm that that wouldn't require tracking. And then another concern is insurance accepting privileges versus a license. So what I'd like to do is invite the association to the January or February meeting to talk about it, and possibly Sean Conway from NBCOT.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Would you explain the privileges part?
So let's say you have a license in Nevada, but you want to practice in Arizona as well. Rather than getting a full Arizona license, you can pay a fee to the compact and get privileges to practice in Arizona.
Okay.
So there's a lot of details about disciplinary actions. Are they done by Nevada or Arizona, and things like that. So I'll be sure to include a copy of the licensure compact, the proposed compact, in the January meeting materials.
Oh, that would be good, and to hear the speaker. I went to the conference on the, you know, the little conference sessions. So, yes, that part I must have missed about the privileges and disciplinary action, you know.
Yeah.
So it would be good to hear that at our January meeting.
Yeah. You know, licensure portability is a big issue in the United States right now. There's a big push for it. So, I would imagine that the compact will go through. They just have to have 10 states participating. Arizona does not have to be one of them, but looks like the association's going to try.
Okay.
Any other questions on that one?
Thank you.
Okay. Item 9B, the financial report. I have not received the report from our November revenue and expenditures. That's something that comes from the Central Service Bureau. I think they're required to have it to us within 10 to 15 days of the end of the month, so hopefully we'll get it next week. But we should definitely still be good. Item 9C, review of recent board staff activities. As you can see, we are still at home. Vicki goes into the office multiple times a week just to check mail real quick, and then she leaves. But we continue to get reports of positive cases in our building. So it looks like we're going to be, you know, working from home for quite some time.
And if you want to skip the statistics, that's completely reasonable.
Yeah, so you have those in front of you. Let's see. Well, I'm really happy on 9D4 that the number of open investigations is going down. I've been trying to focus on getting those cleared up. Item 9E, COVID-19 related license requirement waivers. I did not have time to compile that information, but we're starting to get a lot of follow-up. You know, people are turning in their fingerprints. They're turning in their continuing education. They've taken their exam. So that's starting to clear up. We still have over 100 that are outstanding in total, but they're getting them taken care of. It's a bit of a challenge logistically, but, you know, we're getting it done. We have a really good team, is what, from what I have said before, between the two and a quarter of us, because Amber counts as a quarter. we really keep track of everything on the spreadsheet and making sure all the licenses are updated. Finally, item 9F. We have two new board members.
Drum roll, please.
Yay!
One is an occupational therapist, one is an occupational therapy assistant. I still have to put them through the HR process, and I want to get them started on their training. Because of how busy we are here, I'm going to try to do as much of it through CLEAR as possible with doing the Arizona-specific training here.
Okay.
Awesome.
Can you share names or not yet?
I don't know if I can.
Okay.
So we'll wait.
Just curious.
I was going to ask too, but I'm like, well. Right. So item 10, anything for future board meetings? We've got the board staff job grade adjustments on there for next month. Is there anything else we need to add?
So did we talk about item 10?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's this month.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I've got an important date.
Oh, you have 3 o'clock?
Wait a minute. More important than us. Come on here.
3 o'clock, but I want to...
Okay.
I just read it.
Okay, so very quickly, I did get an email from HR that said requests to review executive level positions can be sent to me along with agency justification describing why the agency feels the need to reallocate the position to a higher or lower level. And it lists several different areas that we could address. Size of the agency, well, you know, we only have 1 3/4 people. But the size of the number of licensees has dramatically increased.
There we go.
Job duties, yep. there are more job duties than there were in the past. So, you know, I'll work with HR in getting some clarification on these items.
Great.
That's it.
All right. And we can keep that item for next month as well. Tackling item number 11, the actual item for next month.
Okay.
All right. And anything else that you added for next month?
Well, we have Mr. Vallarta, hopefully, item 10.
Yep.
Mr. Rose, and Mr. Dr. McAllister.
Do you know how many times that happens a day?
Okay.
Whatever. I'm not a real doctor, as they say. Okay. Item 12, call to the public, and it doesn't look like anybody else is on, so we will go ahead and adjourn this meeting at 3:01.
Perfect.
All right.
Happy holidays to one